You know, we obviously talk about ghosts on this show, but do ghosts ever talk about us amongst themselves? On a recent EPP bonus episode titled Dead or Alive, we hear the story of spirits who gather in a little boy's room and seem to discuss the family and the home they inhabit.
You won't forget this one.
It's a one-of-a-kind ghost story, and you're only going to hear it in our EPP bonus section. Sign up to be an EPP. It's only $5 a month. You keep the wind and the sails of the show. You keep it afloat. You keep it on the air with all the free episodes, and you get access to more than 50 bonus episodes, exclusive video content, and so much more. Please sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com, and let's keep Real Ghost Stories Online on the air.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of said show, by creepy voice guy right there, we will have some pretty good stories for you. Today's episode, could hostile orbs explain the lights that seem to attack two friends alone in the woods? This is interesting. Not used to orbs attacking people.
I know.
Should be good. Could a listener be catching a glimpse of a past life, or is she seeing part of her country's dark history with her own eyes? Can a demonic possession linger after a person dies? We'll hear the story of a possible possession via a gravesite, and a listener shares possibly the saddest yet sentimental story that we've ever had submitted. Those stories, your calls and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
So how do we prepare for the sad sentimental story? Is that a story with, like, you should have Kleenex nearby or a drink?
I'm more of a drink.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's like that.
You can listen to it without crying. It's horrible what happens to this person.
Is it a challenge to listen to it without crying?
No.
Were you able to listen to it without crying when you
read it two or three times without crying?
Okay.
So.
The first time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just asking. But it gets you close to?
No.
No.
No. It's just really sad and horrible what this person goes through.
Okay. Well, there we go. We got some good stories today.
It's not a Titanic moment.
Okay.
By any means. No, don't do that shit. I hate that.
855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Okay. Well, I'm prepared then. All right. Here we go. We will kick off the show here today with a letter coming into us from Michael. And Michael writes in, "Hello, Tony and Jenny. I have two experiences that I'd like to share with you. I've never shared these with anyone else, but I've always wondered what on earth really happened. So I'd like to pose this to you and your audience and see if someone else has had a similar encounter or can at least offer some ideas as to what this was. The first experience happened when I was very young. Can't even remember exactly how young I was, but I'd guess probably 7 or 8. I was in bed at night, but I wasn't sleeping, just sort of lying there waiting for sleep to come. At one point, I turned to the window in my room, and there I saw a bright light through the blinds. It looked exactly like a white 4th of July sparkler, except it was right outside my window, which was on the second floor of the house. I saw the light through the blinds themselves and the holes through which the strings run. I didn't think much of it at the time, which is puzzling since it was such a bizarre experience, but perhaps children don't really register that something impossible is happening the same way an adult would. The second experience is, I believe, possibly related to the first. I was in college, this time a junior, and I was alone in my dorm. I'd already gone to sleep when a bright light right above me shined so intensely that it woke me up. I turned to look up, and there, hovering only inches away from my upturned face, was a fully formed woman about 1.5 to 2 feet tall. She had white material sort of flowing around her as if she were underwater, and she was smiling widely and waving frantically at me as if she were incredibly glad to see me or be seen by me. She had long, silvery blonde hair and had a bright aura all around her, which was the light that had woken me up. I know for certain that I saw her, but just as with the first experience, I didn't think it was odd at all while it was happening. I just acknowledged her with a mental hello, as if I knew that she'd hear me and then turn back over and went to sleep again. I remember the event so vividly that I can be certain that I wasn't dreaming. I remember the dark dorm room, the bed, and the realization that I was seeing something miraculous. But even for that, nothing about it made me feel uncomfortable or excited. It was the most natural thing in the world to see this being, so much so that I really didn't think anything of it until I thought back on it later. Of course, my rational mind had always explained these instances away as cases of classic, okay, here we go, a word, hinagogia. Wikipedia has an excellent
hinagogia.
Yeah. It says Wikipedia has an excellent description of hinagogia if you'd like to know more. Do you have an excellent explanation for it?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
But I remember these things so well, I was so clear-minded when I saw them that I just can't believe that I was hallucinating or dreaming. I'm guessing it has something to do with hallucination. Is that right? Just because it kind of has some of that root word in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Continuing on. Maybe these things were angels or fairies. I do pray to angels very frequently, so perhaps that has something to do with it. But I never imagined angels as being fully formed adult portion women that were nevertheless 1.5 to 2 feet tall. Actually, I have something else to tell you that may or may not be related. I say it may be related simply because this experience happened around the same age, but possibly unrelated because this, I believe, was specifically a ghost encounter. My parents had gone on a week's vacation. My maternal grandmother was staying with my sister and me at our house. It was very early in the morning and we were getting ready to go to school, going through our usual routine and brushing our teeth and getting dressed and so on. I was upstairs in the hallway passing my parents' darkened bedroom. From the master bathroom, just inside the room, I heard my mother's hairdryer turn on. No one was in the room at all, and I said it was dark. My sister was in her room with the door closed, and my grandmother was downstairs in the kitchen. I debated whether or not to go turn the hairdryer back off, but I was understandably frightened about getting near it. Then, after a few seconds, the dryer itself turned off. I went in cautiously and turned on the light. Nothing there. I looked at the dryer and saw that its switch was set to off. Only a few days later, there was a second event that I found even more jarring. My grandmother was still staying with us, and my sister and I were again going about our business preparing for school. Yet again, I was passing my parents' darkened bedroom when suddenly the phone rang. My sister was in her room again, and my grandmother was downstairs. I called out to the house, "I'll get it." And as I approached the phone, it rang once or twice more. When I picked it up, I heard a lot of static on the line and said, "Hello." The voice that responded was a man's voice, deep and gravelly. It spat out a long sentence of seemingly angry words that were so garbled I couldn't understand a single one. It scared me so much that I quickly answered, "I'm sorry. I think you have the wrong number." And then hung up. And while it may have been a wrong number and a bad connection, what really made this seem like a ghost call is that years later, I started looking up phone calls from the other side. And to my amazement, other people have described receiving calls that sound exactly like the one I got that morning. I've since had a slight inkling that my phone call was from my grandfather. He had died on the morning of my birthday, either that very year or the year before. And with my grandmother being there in the house, I sort of have to wonder if he was calling for her. The voice in the line was a little too deep and too guttural for me to say outright that it was him, but what if sound changes on a telephone connection as it moves from one frequency to the other? Anyway, I have no other evidence to suggest this was my grandfather aside from a feeling, but still. Both the phone call and the hairdryer happened the same week. It's always made me wonder if this really was a paranormal encounter. If anyone has any options or opinions of what the phone call was or about the angel fairy being was, please do let me know. Thank you so much for reading my story. I absolutely love the show. Regards, Michael.
Do you think it was an angel or a fairy, possibly, in the first half of the story?
I think that that could be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know. There wasn't a ton of interaction.
No.
It was something that was there. I don't know. It's interesting to be in a state where you're just completely comfortable with these things.
Yeah.
That's the troubling part to me.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is when you're at like a restaurant and the service is utterly horrible and like the food is just horrific and you're just having an overall bad experience. And then you complain to the waiter or waitress, you know, not like you're going out of your way to try and get a free meal or anything, but you're just trying to get the situation corrected because you're trying to get a meal that you showed up for and you'd like to pay for it and be happy at some point.
Okay.
And you're just met with utter blank incompetence and lack of caring. Like, why would you complain? What does it matter?
Okay.
You know, where that person should be feeling the empathy towards the customer.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can compare it to, is whatever the hell is going through that college kid's mind that's working at that restaurant, which is probably next to nothing going through that person's mind, if that's how they're responding, if that's the sort of state that maybe this person was in. Makes sense? Where, for whatever reason, what's going on is not registering.
Okay.
Because that seems to be what happens in those cases.
Okay. I don't know, maybe...
Almost trance-like.
Okay. I was just going to say, maybe he's just used to seeing that type of thing from mm-hmm. seeing the light out his window as a kid.
Sure.
I don't know how many times that happened,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't frighten him then.
Sure.
So I can't roll over and go back to sleep.
No.
Even thinking about some of those things.
I'm wondering are these things communicating a sense of calm and ease telepathically? And that's why there's that added piece to this that we're not aware of, that makes the person not freak out. Like, maybe that is what is, because even Michael said, you know, I don't know why I didn't react, you know,
uh-huh.
but when I went back and looked at it rationally, it's like, oh yeah, it's not normal.
No.
But maybe there's something that's going on there that's communicating in without word
mm-hmm.
that just makes that person calm.
I think it's interesting in the second half of the story, how the paranormal stuff seemed to really increase with the grandmother in the house. Whether or not the phone call was paranormal, the dryer operating itself
mm-hmm.
in an empty room, that was, you know, probably not a short to turn it on and then turn it back off.
I want to know why the dead grandpa wanted to call and tell off the grandma. Because he said it was a bunch of swear words that sounded garbled. And like, is that really the last message he wants to leave? I suppose it is indeed possible, but that's an interesting call, a last call from the dead.
Yeah, it is. But we'll never really know if that was a call from him or not.
Or just someone.
Yeah.
Interesting story, nonetheless. Thank you for writing that in and sharing that with us. Our phone number here is 855-853-4802. Share your real ghost story with us. Of course, you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And you press that subscribe button on the website and or on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, whatever platform it is you're listening to us on. That helps us grow in the rankings. You get all the latest shows sent directly to you. You don't have to search for it all the time. It's a big help to us, so we greatly appreciate that. And it's a help to you, too, because in the shows, just show up and press play. It's easier that way, so please do press subscribe, whatever platform you're listening to us on. Angel writes in, when I was in college, my friend and I were hanging out, sitting on a log in the woods. The woods were behind a cemetery, which you could see from where we were sitting. We'd been out walking the trail in daylight. We didn't mean to be there that late. We weren't even thinking about ghosts. We were just sitting there talking. A light that looked like a flashlight came down the trail, and soon another one came right after it. It was weird because they were gliding smoothly, not bobbing like a flashlight would be if someone were walking in the woods, but we didn't think anything of it. The third one came in after it, and my friend was like, "There are two over there, too. What the heck is going on?" The two were behind us a good distance, away from the first three, and not on any path. All of a sudden, all five turned and came straight at us. I jumped up and grabbed him and said, "Oh my God, we have to get out of here. Don't run." Because I was afraid it would come faster. One sped up, got huge in front of my face, and disappeared. We stumbled through the woods trying to get out. Lights were gone by now. But there was a fog that got thicker and thicker until I could barely see my friend 3 feet in front of me. I grabbed onto him so I wouldn't lose him. When we finally got out, we were terrified. I haven't been back there. at night since. The cemetery is extremely old and huge and has some of our city's founders buried there. Most people don't believe us, but we both saw the same thing, and we know what we saw.
It is so strange for orbs to be aggressive like that.
Sure.
I mean, I'd be curious to know what the color of the orbs were.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's some validity to the color meaning certain types of energy.
Sure.
But that is a real strange story. At first I thought, oh, it's those giant lightning bugs.
Okay.
But no, not coming up and then getting big and attacking. So.
Yeah, I think something with this is... what's interesting about orbs, let me put it like this. I think orbs are just really another form of ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the form that these specific individuals or whatever they are happen to take.
Okay.
So I think it could have easily been a shadow if that's the way it wanted to manifest or was able to manifest. And maybe only certain things can manifest in certain ways. But I don't think what's behind the image we're seeing is any different, whether it's a shadow person, whether it's an orb, whether it's a full entity that you're seeing, an apparition of something. I think it's all, you know, they're individuals,
mm-hmm.
but there's something behind it. And it's just how we're perceiving it or how it's essentially becoming visible to us.
Okay.
That's my thoughts.
Sure. No, that makes sense.
So I think, it's interesting because all too often we don't really have stories of orbs attacking.
Mm-mm.
But at the same point, I think it might be more difficult to decipher if it was attacking as well.
Yeah.
You know, if there's like a large, black, dark entity that is coming up on you, that's easier to tell than this little ball that's like flying around sporadically. And,
yeah.
You know, there's that cute little ball. I bet orbs really do not like being orbs because they don't get taken seriously enough.
That's true. I could see that.
There's an orb complex in the ghost world.
I could see that.
There probably is. Interesting story. 855-853-4802 is our number. Nick from LA says, my grandmother lived in an apartment for many years. At first, there was nothing. I can remember even today staying over with my cousins during the summer, staying up late and taking advantage of grandma's delicious pancakes. Mmm. That's in there.
I know.
I just wanted to do that. All right, enough of that. Nothing happened when I was younger, but as I got into my teens, grandma's apartment started to feel odd right around the time she was about to move. Even in summer, I'd stay the night and sleep on the couch in the living room, all calm. I was usually lying there listening to music or whatnot when I would feel like something was in the room with me. Being the middle of the night with everyone sleeping, I couldn't help but take my headphones off and just listen to the quietness. That's about the time I noticed I could hear someone walking around the living room. This was an upstairs apartment, so you could normally hear the thump of footsteps walking around. The odd thing was there was no thump, but I could hear the crushing noise of the carpet-like footsteps. After a while, it would start to get worse. My grandmother was known for having all the goodies in the fridge, and this particular night, I went to get something from the fridge. My grandmother had this huge glass bowl on the fridge and had been there for years. I remember grabbing a cup, opening the fridge, and this huge, heavy bowl crashing down to where my hand had been. It scared the living hell out of me. I thought nothing of it till later that night. I grew used to the footsteps crunching the carpet and thought nothing of it as I heard them walk towards the kitchen. I can't fully understand what happened next as everyone in the house was woken up to plates, coffee mugs, bowls, pots, and pans being thrown around the kitchen, shattering and everything. We were all too scared to get up. I was too scared to sleep. That morning about 7, we all got up to find the kitchen perfectly clean. Nothing had been moved. Nothing had been touched. And nothing was out of place. Odd? No. After she moved, her new house was fine till we lost our house and had to move in with her. But that's another story for another time. Thanks for reading my story, and I'll catch you guys later.
Now, I know Nick just threw this in as like an afterthought, but when he said that after she moved, her new house was fine till we lost our house and we had to move in with her. And then he's implying things started to happen again. It made me wonder if maybe there's something around grandma that just doesn't like other people in the house. That maybe stuff doesn't happen when other people aren't in the house, when it's just grandma by herself.
Sure. I could see that being a possibility.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting to think of. Huh. Good job connecting dots.
Thank you.
I like that one.
Okay.
855-853-4802. That is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Let's go over to Mike. Mike writes in, hello, Tony and Jenny. This is Mike from all over, bringing you a quick one today. I'm not entirely sure it was a paranormal event, but it was so disconcerting, I thought it worth sharing. A few years ago, I lived in Seattle with my brother and his family. I think I've touched on a few tales of that home in previous letters, most notably the rummaging noises I heard when no one was home that led me to wait outside for an hour until someone else showed up. But this is one I know I have not written about in the past. While living there, I had a few chores expected of me while I was a part of the household. One of the routine ones was to take care of the dog, Maggie. I love Maggie and she loved me, so it made sense. While my brother and his wife focused on their young children, I'd care for her. I'd walk Maggie around the neighborhood and feed her and offer her attention and many an ear scratch. She slept in the bed with me on most nights and excitedly met me at the door whenever I came home. No longer living in the area, I miss her quite a bit. For those familiar with the city and its surrounding suburbs, it was a quiet neighborhood between North Gate and Green Lake. Walking Maggie, I'd loop around the same blocks because there was steep hills all around that only on good days I'd dare venture up on foot. One day I was walking her down our usual route when I noticed a woman looking at me from over a fence in the backyard of a corner house. I can only see her head above the tall picket boards. She stared at me with a look of mild irritation or possibly disapproval. Her hair was white, pulled back tight in a high bun like one might expect to see on an old school marm. Her face was smooth, but the skin hung low from age and was shockingly pale. Her eyes were intense and unwavering. My memory tells me they were a dark color, like brown eyes, but I never got close enough to know for sure. It made me uncomfortable right away to see her, the way she silently stared. I waved at her to diffuse the discomfort. She made no indication of any kind of response. She just stared. I kept my eyes on her, feeling something off about the encounter, but unable to place it beyond feeling judged for the simple mundane activity of walking the dog. Her eyes never left me, and mine never left her until I finally turned around to face forward about half a block further down. Maggie seemed unfazed, pulling and sniffing as she always does. We walked another block before the road dead-ended and we turned around. On the walk back, past the fence, the woman was gone. I was still unnerved and walked swiftly by, propelled by the overzealous dog in pursuit of the next great odor. While living there, I continued our walks down past the spot, always looking for the woman. Whether outside the house or along the fence or in a passing car, I never saw her again. During those walks after the encounter, I studied the place where I had seen her. Noticed the fence was high, like over 5 feet, possibly six. Unless this old woman was a giant, she'd have to have been standing on something to have her whole head appear over the fence. On no other occasion did I even hear or see someone in the large fenced-in backyard. Anyway, in my mind, it was a ghost. I felt something wrong immediately, and I trust my instincts. My first impressions rarely misguide me, if only I'd always listen. And this first impression has me thinking about that non-event years later. I'm still chilled by the memory of that pale and creepy, unmoving face. Thanks, guys. Have a good day. Mike from all over.
I'm one of those people that firmly believes you have to follow your gut. And being that he's not quite sure if it was a ghost or not, if his gut told him that person was bad and that was a bad deal, does it really matter if it was a ghost or not? Because I think it's still paranormal that you're picking that kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm. I don't know at that point. You know, it's one of those things where if you want further proof, I would be looking into, like, the resident of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's there, if anyone. Just to really... I mean, that's where my mind would go.
Yeah.
It's like, let's really try and prove this. But if your gut's usually right, You're probably right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's odd. It's out of place. Why would that person just be standing there? It's hard to officially say.
Yeah.
But if you trust your instincts, you're going to walk away from that. And when you're 80 years old, what are you going to be saying? Probably it was a ghost.
Yeah.
I think that's where I'd be walking away with it.
I do think, though, given the circumstances and the height of the fence and everything, you know, it's pretty questionable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be that he saw a ghost on his path there.
I'm leaning more towards that it was, in fact, a ghost.
Yeah.
It sounds like it. Thank you for writing in creepy imagery.
Yeah.
And that one, for sure. Hazel writes in, hi there, Tony and Jenny. This will be the second time I've written into you guys now. I'm not sure if my story has been read on the air as of yet, as I'm going through the backlog of shows, but I just can't wait for the day I'm listening in and my story gets read out of the blue. This story is about what I feel was a possible glimpse I had into my past life of mine. This happened when I was very young, around 10 or 11. It happened a handful of times before the concluding event. So occasionally, I get an incredibly strong feeling of deja vu. This feeling would be so strong and overwhelming that I'd actually get physically dizzy, sometimes even to the point where my vision would get a little hazy. As these occurrences were so sparse and I felt totally fine afterwards, I put it down to being dehydrated, tired, etc. However, the most intense and last occurrence made me think otherwise. The feeling of deja vu began, and I began to get dizzy to the point where I thought I'd faint. So I leaned against a wall and just breathed, hoping it would pass. After a couple of seconds, my vision clouded, but this time it was so severe I couldn't even see. Before I began to panic, an image appeared before me. I did not physically see it, as I actually couldn't see anything, but it seemed as if I were looking at it, if that makes any sense. Not like it was appearing in my mind, but right in front of me. It looked exactly like the burning stakes you'd see on television, on which witches were burned, already with the roaring orange flames licking up the wood which made up the prime. Suddenly, a thought floated across my mind. That's meant for me. After seeing this image for a couple of hazy seconds, my vision slowly came back to normal, and I sat there contemplating what exactly had happened. I wasn't frightened, but rather in awe. It fascinated me for a long time afterwards, but eventually it came to rest in the dusty corners of my mind, forgotten, only to be stirred after hearing fellow listeners' stories. It never occurred to me that perhaps this was a glimpse into a past life of mine, but now feeling slightly more educated in the area of the paranormal, as I do, partly in thanks to your show, I believe this may have been what it was. I'd love to hear any opinions or observations you guys and the community at large may have on my experience. I have a couple more stories to tell, one involving a very dark and violent entity which terrorized family members of mine, and hopefully we'll be able to share these with you in the future. Thank you guys so much for all the hard work you've been doing and the community you have created for those who are creepily inclined. Love and good vibes to you all. Stay spooky. From Hazel in Ireland.
For our listeners who aren't really into history, Hazel is from Ireland, and in the 17th century, the witch craze was really, really bad, and millions of people were condemned to die because they were deemed witches.
Mm-hmm.
And it was particularly bad in England and Ireland and Scotland. So that being said, it made me wonder, yes, could it be a vision of a past life? Probably. But it also made me wonder if it isn't something ghostly that's just showing her glimpses of the past.
Where it's not necessarily her past life, it's something that wants to be recognized.
Something that may have happened in that spot, or okay. Something that's saying, you know, here's what happened, almost a wrinkle in time, but not quite,
mm-hmm.
to where she's just able to see it because her vision goes foggy.
Sure. You know, it's really hard to say. I could honestly say either could be a possibility here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just some cases out there where people have such irrefutable stories of past lives.
Oh, sure.
And it's like how in this, but I mean, the only thing that you can argue with some of those cases when they get to be so crazily detailed, where they can like literally take you to the grave
mm-hmm.
of the person, is, okay, maybe if you don't believe in past lives, maybe it's not a past life, but exactly what you described. Someone else trying to get their message across and it's being interpreted as, well, this was me. Or if you believe in past lives, that seems to be the simpler
sure
explanation of the two.
Yeah.
Neither are super simple, really.
No.
But very interesting. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know which one it was, but I would venture to guess one of the two. I would almost lean more towards the someone's trying to get a message across to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't had more of those experiences, I think the more experiences you have and the more first person you're seeing it, that almost makes me start to think more of this was my energy.
I just think it's interesting that this is happening to her while she's awake and not during a dream. Because
mm-hmm.
I think in my mind that would take a lot more effort for something to show her
sure
that while she's awake.
I wish I had fun visions like that of being burned at the stake when my vision goes fuzzy.
Okay.
I never really have anything. It's just like when you stand up really quick.
Uh-huh.
It happened much more frequently when I was like a teenager.
Yeah.
I remember sitting up or standing up and all of a sudden, oh, I can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted some fun visions. Never, ever got one.
Okay.
Maybe someday. Rob writes in, hey guys, I had to write in after hearing a strange story of what seemed like sibling rivalry. I'd spoken with my buddy Steve about a few things. He asked me to help him out financially. His father died over a year ago, and it was of natural causes, but nobody helped pay for the funeral. He found out he struggled financially, and his family didn't help, so after we found out he was about to lose his house, we all helped him out. We also had to be around because his depression almost made him take off work, make him take time off work, and we knew he couldn't afford it. We spent time staying over at his place, making him wake up just to get out of his house and help pay some of his bills. Strange part was his mother and other family members didn't help him. It may have been a mistake, but we asked his mother if she'd go with Steve and visit his dad's grave. We thought it was a good idea at the time, but he was angry when we got back. We didn't know too much about the relationship. His dad was a really nice guy to everyone. Steve told us that his dad was naturally friendly, but his parents divorced when he was young. His mother had been in several abusive relationships before they got married and would often get violent with his father. Steve also mentioned that he had two sisters. The eldest was from his mother's prior relationship, and the other was a year older than him. They were all close in age, but the younger sister died when she was 4. He recalls it was because his sister was born with health problems, and his father was showering his mother with gifts because he knew she was hurting. Steve also admitted to being in therapy for several years. Growing up, he also recalls his eldest sister was taking advantage of his father's generosity. His father treated that girl just like his own, and she'd often cry, saying she missed his sister. The part that bothered Steve was how she named all her pets and dolls after the sister who had died. While his father assured Steve it was her way of dealing with death, there were more complications that occurred in his youth. That sister hated Steve and would insist he should have died too. The girl would also hit Steve to mimic her mother's abusive habits towards his father, which were vocal and physical. Steve would tell both his parents what happened, but none of them believed him. It wasn't until he noticed his own mother observing a few times when his sister would attack him, he told his school counselor. It was a counselor who managed to document his stories and informed Steve's father that he wasn't making up the stories, and there were moon-shaped scratch marks that appeared to be the same size as his sister's fingernails. This was when his father approached his mother about the situation. To his dismay, her and her daughter were proud of what they did. His dad never lived at that house again, and his parents were divorced a few months later. Steve lived with his father up until the courts awarded custody to his mother, which scared him. He was only there for a couple weeks, but during the time, his mother allowed the eldest sister to beat him, and she declared her son a sinner. It wasn't until his counselor stepped in when Child Services took custody of Steve and eventually returned him to the care of his father. This only angered his mother more, but it almost cost Steve's father his freedom. His eldest sister tried to make a false report claiming that she was molested by his father. Her main proof was being showered by gifts. But while she originally named all the pets and dolls after the deceased sister, they all suddenly had different names. It's still unknown to this day if her mother put her up to it, but the young girl's story kept changing and the case was dismissed. Despite the horrible situation, Steve's father still found ways to financially support all of them. It was the kind of person he was. When Steve became a teenager, he gained the courage to want to be around his mother and sister again. His father decided it was best to only be around them during the holidays and only around other family members who would be able to witness if anything wrong happened. For what it's worth, it was a positive step and nothing wrong occurred during the family gatherings. The problem was his eldest sister became jealous of Steve for being known as the good kid while she was getting in trouble frequently. His sister was vocal about not wanting him around and she became uninvited to the future family gatherings after threatening to kill him, while having her several boyfriends threaten the same. Right before her 18th birthday, Steve's eldest sister died of an overdose. It wasn't investigated, but most of the family believes it was a suicide. Her body was buried next to the other sister, and it was when Steve said that his mother started to love him again. Something changed about her, and his therapist assured him it was likely because his mother knew that he was her only living child. This was something he missed in his life, as he tried to make his father try to patch things up and at least talk to his mother again. His dad declined, but insisted he had always been there for her financially. Soon as his father died, it turned out he actually did leave everything for Steve's mother. Since we're aware that Steve ended up paying for all of his father's funeral expenses, we asked him why his mother never bothered helping him. This was when Steve mentioned why he was depressed in the first place. Roughly a month after his father's funeral, Steve went to his mother's house to talk. They discussed what was left for her, and all the money was for her to live in a retirement home. Steve knew it was best that he didn't complain about the money. In a few years, it would be all paid for. They both decided to attend church that weekend, and after they would pay their respects, Steve had bought various different flowers, keeping them in an ice chest as he drove with his mother to the cemetery. He recalled her picking the flowers she wanted as he filled a plastic cup with reclaimed water from a nearby faucet. Steve placed a few flowers while adding some water as he shared some words near his father's grave. Near him were other family members, including his youngest sister, who died young. He repeated this process until he got near his mother. She appeared distraught. Between sobbing and uttering her feelings, she was picking away the grass that had grown around the grave. It was when he noticed it was his eldest sister's grave, and due to her tragic demise, he remained quiet. He even claimed that he was willing to wait as long as his mother needed. He tried placing a few flowers in the rusty container near the grave, but his mother stopped him. While a bit confused, he tried to give his mother a hug, but she retracted by hitting him across the face. As soon as he began to question her, she spoke in a deep, demonic voice and grabbed the cup of water he had poured it on the flowers and poured it on the flowers. He didn't feel that this person was human. He had just left church and driven her there. Noticing that she was protective of this specific grave, Steve reached for the flowers intended for it, and was greeted by his mother, scratching his forearm open with her nails in a single swipe. He stood up, looked at the wound, and recalls blood beginning to roll across his arm down his elbow. Steve took a few steps back. Part of him wanted to find a rational explanation, but something made him gravitate away from the person who just attacked him. This is when he noticed he was once again in front of his father's grave. The only thought in his head was to get far away from this place, which he did. The strange part was that nobody complained that Steve left his mother at the cemetery, and he was the only person who ever said it happened. Even his own mother denies it, despite other people in the church who recall her conversation about planning to visit the cemetery the same Sunday with Steve. It would make more sense if she was upset at him for leaving her there. The creepiest part is the conclusion. Other family members claim that Steve's mother created a shrine there, almost as if she had worshipped the grave of her own deceased daughter. Some people suspect that this woman's daughter was attached to a demon, one that may still have some connection to her grave. Thanks for reading, guys, and sorry for the long story, but that was how it was presented to me. I figure it's best to include all information in case other listeners may verify the stories with photographic proof or other accounts of witnessing it happen. Take care.
So do you think that the demon that may have possessed the daughter got a hold of the mother there at the grave?
I certainly think there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when the daughter was alive, I think there was some control there with the daughter and the mother.
Yeah.
And that's why the mother suddenly seemed different
mm-hmm.
when when the daughter was finally dead. But I think that there's something that's still drawing her to that grave and then taking over her.
Beyond just mourning of a lost child.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who create shrines to their lost kids. I mean, they're not like worshiping their kids, but, you know, maybe shrine's the wrong word, but, you know, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that's normal. That's a lot of people do that. That's a part of the mourning process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a common thing to do. And I don't consider that abnormal or paranormal or spooky or anything like that. But it sounds like there's something beyond that going on here.
Yeah.
Well beyond that, especially when the person is turning violent, which would be out of character at this point in time in this person's life.
Yes.
Towards the other person when reconnected with the person who originally made them violent when they were alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on there.
Yeah.
Not a grave I'd want to go by.
No.
Makes you wonder if other people can then become under the control of that or be affected by that if they were to visit, or if it's only meant for one person or anyone it can gravitate to. I don't know.
I guess at any point you can be susceptible to that.
Sure.
You know, there's no bounds. I think it could happen at any time.
Which is kind of scary because when you have grave sites like that have a lot of stuff around them,
mm-hmm.
that attracts people to them.
It does.
That attracts, go and look, read if there's any story or something. And it's almost like luring someone over to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting.
Yeah,
I'm going to be thinking differently now when I go through a cemetery.
Okay.
And I see that, you know, and I there's nothing wrong with doing that. But now after hearing that story, that's going to be in the back of my mind, too.
Sure.
So interesting one. John writes in, my mother was a drug addict and I was a child of the 80s. We were living in that time with a musician. My mom tried to write some songs herself and would slur them to me when we were alone. I was only a toddler. Sometimes they'd forget about feeding me. I can recall foraging the apartment for food. As pizza was the primary food group we were subsisting on, I was grateful when I found some crust left in a box that hadn't been tossed. I drank from the dregs of old beer bottles, tied my hunger, and occasionally munched the cat's food as well. Well, so far it is the most depressing story we've ever had.
It gets even worse.
Somehow my mother's boyfriend got a hold of a bottle of pharmaceutical morphine. They put me to bed early, and the music played on in the other room all night. When morning came, I was hungry, so I went to find my mother, but she and her boyfriend were still asleep. Around noontime, I decided to try to wake up my mom, but she stayed sleeping even though her eyes were open. Her boyfriend was not moving either. The neighbor that did not like us knocked on the door and yelled at us to turn the music down. So I turned the knob, and it got very quiet. I thought I heard my mom try to say something, but it was more like a loud burping noise. Before long, it was getting very dark again. The kitty was meowing, so I offered him some cereal I'd found in the kitchen. There was more knocking at her door, but my mom had told me to never open the door. I was starting to get sad because no one was talking to me, and I carried our cat to the bedroom to tell him, don't worry, because I would take care of him. I fell asleep with him cuddled next to me, and I remember how loud he purred. In the morning, I woke up to my mom singing to me, and I was so glad that she had finally woken up. She had this song she sang to me that went, until I am there, just keep me in mind. Until I come for you, you'll be just fine. I opened up my eyes, but my mom wasn't with me. I heard the song, but she never woke up. Eventually, some people came and unlocked the door and found me. My mother died when I was only 4 years old. I can still remember that song. It's really the only thing I have left of her. Childhood can be rough. That's putting it lightly.
I think that's the most depressing and saddest story we've ever had.
Yeah.
Because that's just horrible.
Well, looks like Mom maybe got her shit enough together in death for one last lullaby.
Yeah.
But that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say. I mean, the only thing you can make good out of that story is at least he had one semi-positive memory at the end when she was dead.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing he has of her, not, oh, I found her dead.
Right.
It's like, here's an interesting story about my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. sorry to hear that you had to go through that in your life. Thank you for sharing that story with us. And you win the award for the most depressing story we've ever had on our show.
Yeah.
Not making light of it. It just is.
It is.
It just really is. Thank you for sharing it, though. It is indeed a ghost story, and that's what we are looking for. Richie writes in, we just got back from Lake Tahoe and had a chance to visit the very old Virginia City in Nevada. While the majority of the town was filled with trinket and candy stores, they were located in very old buildings dating back to the early 1800s. I've been there as a kid and enjoyed the toy guns and the old-timey photos with the family, but as an adult, I was able to enjoy the antiquity of the town and the buildings within it. While walking with my son down the uneven planks of aged wood that are sidewalks, I saw an open door and a narrow stairway, and we just walked in. I quickly realized how old this place was and saw the small signs stating it was the Silver Queen Hotel. The stories and experiences at the SQH vary from loud noises to odd pictures taken. I then saw signs stating that the Ghost Adventure crew had been there several times, and immediately after this realization of where I was, I heard the heavy bellow of the wind whip through the second floor we were on. Great movie timing. It was a coincidence, I'm sure, and I know it was wind since the second story window that led to a fire escape was wide open to help with the heat, but I couldn't shake the uneasy feeling of how utterly quiet it was and that everything seemed to be stuck in time. My son was running around and trying to open doors, but all were locked. My wife told me it was an operating hotel, but there weren't any signs that there were any occupants that day. As we ascended the next flight of stairs and got in my head and wanted to see something, but all I could see or feel was how time left this building standing in great condition to preserve all the moments, good or bad, shared in this town, in this hotel. I'll include the pics we took there in a while, and if there's anything in the photos that they still remind me of how this hotel shut out all of the street noise of the city and how alone and depressed I felt, even with my son next to me on one of our best vacations as a family. I've been a proud EPP for months now and continue trying to recruit new peeps to RGO. I'm working on my wife right now, but anything remotely paranormal freaks her out. I'll work at it slowly, and I'm sure she'll be with me listening soon. Thank you, Richie. Eventually, I got my wife to host the show with me.
Yeah.
From never even listening to it. You haven't even listened to, like, the first, I don't know how many episodes I did before you came on.
I haven't. I haven't gone back and listened to anything from before I started.
No.
So I have stories to catch up on, too.
So it can be done.
It can be done.
You can recruit them.
Yes.
So, interesting story. It's interesting how some of these old places like that, I don't know if they were just so well built insulation-wise and you don't hear anything or what it is.
I don't know. And being an old mining town like that, you know, they saw horrible tragedy and the worst and the best of people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much stays there of that energy.
Sure. And you can feel it within the walls.
Yes.
I wonder if having a building that is so sturdy and so soundproof, if that also helps encapsulate some of that energy better than like a brand new building that wouldn't have been built quite as good. You know.
I don't know.
Like craftsman type standards, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. And, you know, most of those old buildings like that, they're primarily wood or stone or a combination of both. You know, they're very porous.
Yeah.
Natural materials. I think that helps to maintain an energy level there as well.
Yeah. And a lot of it probably still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like the inner workings of it, not a whole lot has been replaced.
Right.
So, interesting story. Thank you for sharing. Jill writes in, well, Tony and Jenny, I finally am in front of my computer to share my most recent ghost adventure. Back when your show was just starting up, I called in a story about a ghost hunt in at a historic grain mill. Recently in June of 2015, I revisited the same grain mill now that I've gathered my courage again. This time I was in a group with other ladies and three men. The lady with me was part of my group, but the men were from a different group. The night was very eventful, so I'll just share one of my encounters. The little group had found ourselves alone in the building. Others who had been there were taking a break outside when I think I helped encourage a child spirit to interact with us. using a flashlight to respond to our questions, we learned a little bit about the spirit before getting up close. We asked it to make the light come on very bright for one answer and flicker the light or shut it off for another answer. It indicated that it was a boy, not a man. As the spirit became comfortable with us, it began using the flashlight and lighting up an EMF meter at the same time. So we added the ghost box so we could hear his own voice. Then I felt like the energy was moving closer to me. It seemed to be pushing me down. I asked if he wanted me to sit on the floor and both tools lit up, so I sat. We went through some more questioning when it also asked the other female investigator, I'll call her Beth, to sit on the floor with me. He seemed to want to play a game. I waited for a pat on the head like duck, duck, goose, but nothing happened. We turned on our ghost box and a boy's voice said, I'm a kid. We all laughed, but then the voice changed to that of a young girl. A girl voice asked for one of the men in our group to come sit near her. From my seat on the floor, I could see under the small table where we had set the flashlight, movement under the table, like something was crawling around under there. This made me nervous, so I pointed it out, and two others also saw the moving shadow when I said, look under the table. So our brave guest investigator, I'll call him Sean, sat on the floor directly in front of the table by himself. One of Sean's friends said, kick Sean in the knee. Went laughing, but nothing happened. I said, maybe you don't want to kick him. Maybe you want to kiss him. The ghost box spoke up and said, yes. Sean felt like his sleeve was being tugged on, but very lightly. He never did get his kiss. Not sure why the children are there, but this area of the grain mill has been set up like a schoolroom. I'm not sure why. The Historical Society said it was used as a school for a while. Though these desks and toys are not original, but are from the correct time period. I tried to convince the children that what they were looking for was waiting in the light. They did not seem interested. I've attached my original audio clips and one photo from the investigation. I thought it might bring the story to life. As for the photo, keep in mind there are trees outside the building that could make strange shadows on the windows, but it could be one of the kids. Thanks for the great show. I'm now a proud EPP, Jill.
And the pic is very creepy. We'll have to put that one up.
Do you have it?
I can give it to you.
Okay. You send it to me, and we'll put it up in the gallery on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. Interesting story.
Yeah, it is a very interesting story. I think that it's funny how they just didn't care to go into the light. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the time, I think kids are going to do more what adult says, even if they're dead. Mm-hmm. But it's funny. They just didn't want to.
And it's also interesting to think, were the kids in any way connected to the mill, or were they some way connected to the school desks that that existed from that time period that were then brought back in?
I don't know.
You know?
That I can't tell.
That you really wouldn't know, but I would say the possibility exists of not even having to be the mill that's on it, but maybe what's been put into the mill. Oh, I've seen this. Okay, this picture. Okay, yeah. It is kind of creepy. It does appear that there is something small peeking out that window.
Yeah.
We'll put that up in the section. Can you forward that over to me?
Sure.
Again? All right, there you go. Check it out at realghoststoriesonline.com. There you go. Wraps up Real Ghost Stories Online for today. If you like our show, please consider supporting it. It is only $5 a month, less than the cost of a cup of coffee. And you get all of our bonus episodes, 50-some bonus episodes to sit there and binge on. And also, of course, exclusive video content and brand new bonus episodes every single week. So check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Become an EPP. That's what you click on. And you help to keep our show on the air. That's how we support the show, is with you guys. So please keep that support up if you're already doing it. And if you're not yet, please help us out. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.